Okay, let's go ahead and get started. I think the projector is turning on right now. I see it on there. I see a light there, but I don't. Why is it? Oh, that's why. The blank button was pressed. Anyway, what I wanted. So I've noticed some of you are having certain problems with the assignment. Some of you have talked to in office hours and other questions, and so I realized there's a few points that I think are a bit unclear, and I thought I'd try walking through some of the things. I'm guessing for those of you who have already submitted your assignment, I believe you can resubmit your assignment if I tell you something that will help, but I haven't actually seen that many assignments be submitted, so I'm thinking that for most of you this will still be a help. Funny that. The day before the assignment, people haven't turned it in early. what was I saying? I can't actually read that while the glare is so bad here. No. That's what I was saying. Okay. Assignments. So what I wanted to talk about was some of these questions. First off, add a home button to the submit results screen that takes you back to the form screen. So this gets at how do you make buttons in a web page? We haven't actually talked about that. So. But how I kind of shown you how to make a button already.
Well, you sort of did implicitly when you provided us with the submit button built into the first that we already have on the form page.
Exactly. So let's look at that. So you could repurpose that. So I'll tell you there's two basic ways of doing this. One is you make a form with no content and just a submit button. That you give it the right parameters so it acts like a hyperlink. Or you have a hyperlink and you style it to look like a button. Those are two ways. So it turns out the easiest way, if you just did a Google search of, HTML button hyperlink, there is a very nice Stack Overflow article. Which walks you through the different options. So there's also a way to use JavaScript, but you really shouldn't do that. We're not talking about client-side JavaScript, and besides, that doesn't fail as gracefully.
I don't know. Nowadays, JavaScript's always got to be enabled, so if a button,
But you can do this either as a basic form or as this. Now, what's the key thing that makes this different from your regular form, other than the fact that you don't have the other fields? One other key difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's a get, not a post. Exactly. See, the get method is get, not method is post. That means it will do an HTTP get as far as to an HTTP post. And this matters because if your form decides to do HTTP post of slash, how will your app respond?
It just says it can't be found.
Right, because you haven't defined a post handler for slash. You only defined a get handler for slash. So, you have to say that. And if you do, and does this mean you could potentially have a form be processed by using a get request there? Yes. And you could make the form handler just handle the get on the server side. Should you do that? In principle, no, because gets are for things that are. The rule of thumb is if a client does a get multiple times, there shouldn't be any difference in the state of the system. If someone doing the same get request once versus 20 times should produce the same result. For a post, there is no such guarantee. That's why your web browser, whenever you come to a form and you hit reload, if that was produced by a post, that's when you say, you're going to be resubmitting the results of this form. Are you sure you want to do that? Because that could, say, make you buy another set of airplane tickets. So maybe you don't want to do that. So and so browsers know there's a difference between gets and posts. Browsers will do gets indiscriminately. Posts, it will, once you hit it once, it won't just do a reload and do the post again. Because it knows that if it did it again, it might cause problems. So that's the main reason why you want to be clear when you use get versus post. But at a protocol level, they kind of look, they look very similar. And in fact, can be used interchangeably in some ways, although the encoding of the body can change. Did anyone find this page? Okay. I'm just curious if anybody come across this in their research. I thought those were a rather nice little summary. And honestly, this is the kind of thing you should do for this class. Googling random bits of information to cover things that you do not understand is perfectly acceptable and indeed encouraged. Because if you're doing web programming, you're gonna need to do this. Because there's gonna be little things you want to do, and it won't be quite obvious how to do it. And you might be able to figure out from first principles, but why bother? Find the pattern.
Adapt it. Move on with your life.
So I wasn't trying to be tricky, but I was trying to sketch you to see how do you get by. The other thing is the full list of records on the screen. I've talked about arrays, and you're supposed to do arrays, but there has been some. I've gotten some questions about that. So the key questions I've got is the interactions between Jade and Node, and how do you pass data between them?
So when you look here at this exports add function,
what you see here, there is an object called res, which was passed into this function. This is the response. You're calling a method on it called render. So the response object that's passed in is a render one. Node provides this to you. This is going to be the response that's going to be sent back. It's a client. It has a render thing, so this is what the render method is part of what you defined earlier when you set up what are the views. What's the view engine? What's this add in quotes? What is that referring to specifically in this context?
The template views, the JTemplate views.
This is in the render function, this first argument is the template. You have to, the idea is, the whole idea in Node, when you send back a response, is that there is a template which gives the form of that web page, and then you fill in values. So, first argument is the template. Second argument is how to fill it in. What data type is the second part? It's an object. Hashes and objects in JavaScript are kind of the same way. It's an object. It's an object with 5 properties with 5 values. And these values come from the request that came in. The body of the request, we had specified in our form 5 values, so you know, 4 values that were input from the user, those come in to the server here. These values are mapped to these names. These are the names that Jade can access. So what Jade gets, it gets the template, and then it gets an object. And in that object, it assumes there are properties. And each of those properties becomes a variable inside the J template. This is a common kind of practice you see in JavaScript when you want to pass a bunch of things to something else. You just wrap them all up inside an object. That's what we've done here. And so when you go into the template engine, we go into add.jade, you see that we refer to five elements. Well, four, actually. Name, country, date, email. So the syntax, hash time, and curly braces in Jade means access the values of a variable. Remember, Jade is a template language. Its syntax is different from regular JavaScript. Although sometimes it looks kind of like JavaScript, but it is a different language. So if you're going to pass data into the Jade template, that's a variable size. You know, there's two things you have to do. You have to pass the data in, and then you have to use it. So what sort of data type should you pass in here? We're talking about, going back up here, from the... What sort of data type should I be passing in? Should I pass in an array here? I have the first argument to this is the name of the template. Should the second element be an array? No. It should not be an array. It should be an object. It should be an object of which it has a property, which is the array you want, and you give it a name. And you have to do it that way, because otherwise you have no name for the array when you get to the template. This is where you specify the names. So you call it A, you call it people, or whatever you want, but you really only, things should you assign here? You could have one array that's an array of objects, and each object contains all these fields. Or you could pass in, this object could have these five things, but each of these is an array. So you pass in five arrays, and you push each of these onto there, or you have one array, which is of objects, with all of them bundled together. Same difference, really, one's a little, I don't care which. You can get both to work. But that's what you have to do. Now, whatever array, whether you pass in one array or five arrays, when you pass it in, where should it be declared? And where do you want the first use of it to be? Do you want it to find it inside this function? No. You really don't want it inside this function. Because it will not be persistent across calls to the function. If you add a var, if you say var, A here, and then set equal to the whatever array, or push onto it, or whatever, that's going to get reassociated every time this function calls, or on every page reload. You won't be able to remember the password. You have to have it at the top-level scope, so you'll have to have var a here, outside of it. And then you can do the pushes inside your array. You take var a equals empty array, and then in here, you can push onto it. And then you pass it on. Yes.
Could you put that in a separate module, or would that be good, practice to put it in the functions?
Yes, it is, because all of the only things that can be seen outside of this file are things you export. So even if you put a global variable in this file, it is actually local to this file. The only way you make it accessible by other parts of the code is if you exported that value. So yes, it's perfectly safe to do kind of a global here. But it's global to this file.
This is a function. This is a closure. Where do you want? You want another one?
You can have variables like private variables inside functions.
Yes, you can. Yeah, you can. You can do that. Yes, but it's a lifetime of the function. The idea is anything inside the function is created anew. If you want something to persist across invocations, it has to be something outside the function. Any var keyword inside of a scope is going to be new every time the scope is called.
But isn't there a type of function that is persistent also? Like it keeps persistent?
So the way you make persistent state is, remember you did the nested functions. You have one function that returns a function, and inside of it, it had a variable there. So basically, you're doing the same kind of thing as it's putting it here, except it's all inside of a function. This is the pattern for making, for doing a constructor, but without actually using a constructor. This is what you can do to make private methods. We can talk about that more in depth. I think that probably needs a little more expansion, which I am happy to do if people are interested in it. We talked about that earlier, but I find a lot of these concepts, you see them once, and you kind of go, I think I get it, and then you go back and you realize, no, I don't get it, and then you come back and you hear it again, and maybe it's a little more clear. So for some of you who have already gotten this and it's all perfectly crystal clear, I'm sorry. But for the rest of you, I'll try massaging your mental models. You had a question, right?
Yes. If you're passing in an array of information, the way that it's described in the assignment, it wants it to print the information in the same format that it's been printed with an extra line and then another almost paragraph. So we would put like some sort of loop in J.
Exactly. That was the second part I hadn't talked about that. So the first part is you have to pass this array into Jade. You have to make an array that stores old and current ones, and every time you get one, you want to add it to the end or beginning of the array. It doesn't really matter. I didn't specify the order, but you push it on there. Then after that, you have to go down to the Jade template, and in here, you need a loop.
Now, the two key things for the syntax of the loops is basically what you expect, except for two things. One is you have to use a dash in front of the for loop to say that this is, I'm not sure exactly why that has to be the case, but that's just how Jade does it. You have a dash, a space, and then you say for, and you have the syntax. The other thing is you don't note the blocking of the for loop using braces.
You don't what?
You don't use braces to denote the block that the for loop is looping over. You use indentation. In other words, it's Python-like in what you do. You don't do the indentation right, it's not going to work, as some of you have found out. But you see that you have to have once you put the loop there, then you do the indices, you'd be able to access the arrays and stuff. You just put your array subscripting in there or object properties, dot notation. That should all work fine. But you just have to put you have to do that other syntax. So if you look at the Jade reference page, you'll see examples of for loops. So I can go now and talk about nested functions, or I can talk more about Jade. What are people feeling more confused about or things? You're kind of following up on that?
Yeah, maybe you could teach us HTML a little bit.
What do you feel is mysterious about HTML? Yeah, Jade is, you're right, Jade is basically a simplified representation of HTML. Anyone else interested? Should I go over more HTML basics? I'm just kind of curious who's interested in that, because I kind of wasn't really planning on doing that, but if it will be helpful, I'm happy to do that, okay?
You don't have to.
Well, I'm just wondering, I'm interested in the things that are causing people confusion. And one of the things of this run of this class is, in my first run of the class, I found out some of the points, and I'm still refining that, so...
Yeah. You know, with your question C1 on the assignment, what do you need about, like, the supportive JavaScript objects? Like, what do you want us to write for that?
In C1?
Yeah, how does this mean involve JavaScript support objects?
I think I misworded that. The word, what I meant here is, and I will fix it right now. Okay. Let's fix that. What is it? Is it support for modules? That's a lot easier, isn't it?
I swear I looked at that multiple times and did not see that, but
because really the whole thing with,
so let me explain to you what this is talking about.
What are the names given to exports.index and exports.add in app.js? So if you look at it's index.js. You see here we've got exports.index and exports.add. We've defined two methods. Are these methods called in this file? No. They are just defined. So it's kind of a waste of time if you don't call them somewhere. So where are they called? Well, first of all, when should they be called? You know, conceptually, when should these functions be called?
When you hit submit.
Well, when a web client requests the home, you know, slash, or when the request slash add. Here, this one will be done by a post, and that one will be done by a get. But when those pages are requested, these functions should be called because they're the ones that generate the response. So. Where is that association made? I'll tell you, there's really not much else other code in this application. It's probably in app.js somewhere, right? Because that's where most of the code is. Where is it in app.js? Right here. But you'll notice, what does this refer to? Does this refer to exports.add or exports.index? No. It refers to routes.index and routes.add. What just happened there? How did the name get transformed? It said exports over there. Why is it saying routes here? That's what that question is asking. So why? What is the code at the top of this file? Anything of relevance?
Yeah, so in Node, you only can see the scope within the scope of the file.
Right.
So when you want to get a module, such as here in the routes folder, we have the index.js file, and we use require. It always looks at that index.js file, and it gets everything that is an exports object. It kind of packages it in an object and it returns it to you.
And it returns it, yes. So what happens, what this requires does is it loads up the code that is the index.js in that directory, or I think if you specify a fully qualified file, it'll do that one, but if you use a directory, it'll start index.js in that directory. It evaluates all of it. It finds all of the, it finds the exports object that that defines and returns that as the value of it.
So it changes the name.
It, the requires returns the exports object as its value. The value of the exports object from that file is the value here. But what's the name we give it here? We associate that because that's, remember, there's the name and then there's the value. This returns the value of the exports object from this index.js in that directory. we have to now, in order to refer to that value inside of this file, we need a name. The name is Rex. So this process of associating a name with a value is called binding. And it's a bit of a funny thing when compared to classic, you know, like more imperative languages, like C or something. Because when you think of a variable in C, there's the name, and then there's the value of it. And the name is almost like it's referring to a specific address in memory. And that's almost fixed. It's like they're the same thing, and you can't change them around. And when you can change them around, you're talking about a pointer. And when you talk about a pointer, you have to dereference the pointer in order to get the value. You could almost say every symbol in JavaScript is a pointer. Kind of. I mean, in the sense of any name can refer to any value. We don't do this whole weird dereferencing thing because we can't get at the value of the pointer. We can't ever access that number, that address. That's all hidden from us. So it's like you're all using pointers, but the pointers are always dereferenced when you access them. That's a mechanistic view. The logical view is, I have names. I associate the names with values. And the values, and I can generate these values on the fly, and the weird thing is the values can not just be things like numbers, they can also be code or objects. And I don't care about what the type is of the value I'm referring to, any name will do. In a language like C, names have types. JavaScript names do not have types. Clear as mud? I'm happy to try to explain this from different angles and things, but it's simple yet subtle. So if you feel like you got it, that's great. If you don't have it, you're missing something, and it's a key point. Mm-hmm. So what feels and what seems confusing? The exports part. So who here feels confused about the exports part? The exports kind of seem like, okay. So if someone who feels like it's clear, can they try to explain it? Or maybe, sure.
Think of it as it reading the file where that you specify and require, then puts it inside a function where exports is defined, and at the bottom it says return exports, and then just calls that function. So you get this.
Does that help?
It's the same thing as in a function, you can have var something, and then you return it. If you call it again.
So I get how you're trying to explain it. Let me see if I can try to phrase it a little differently, but along the line. So think about when you do a requires, it's like the text of the index.js for that file was pasted into here. But it was pasted in here in the context of a whole separate function. It was wrapped in the context of a whole separate function, so everything is private to that. And all that function returns is one value. It returns exports. That's what the function does. It's like the entire code, no. That either made things a lot clearer or a lot more confusing. One of the two, and I'm not sure which. But if it made it more confusing, that actually is a step in progress because that hopefully helps you realize you don't understand something that you should. So, yes?
Okay, well, why didn't you call it express and route?
Let's try a little more concrete thing. What are these referring to here? Express and routes. What are those?
The two methods that were declared as exports in the other
title. No, but just concretely, what are those? Those are paths. Those are directories, right? These are the names of directories. That's what you normally give to a requires thing. It's the name of a directory. This one is the name of a directory in your current directory. That's why it's dot slash. The other one is the name of a directory that's somewhere else, and you're not quite sure where, but it's in the search path of the modules for Node. So Node will go off and find it. It might be in your local Node modules. It might be in another directory part of the system installation of Node. You don't know. You don't care. NPM install is what makes sure that these are all valid. And how does NPM install make sure these are all valid? What information does it get? Does it scan this file? Does it take a look at this file at all? What file does NPM install look at? It looks at... Where's my package? Oh, thank you. It looks at this. This is input to NPM install. That's the only thing it's for. Really is for NPM install. And what it's saying is, these are the modules I need. I need Express, and I need Jade. Give them to me. So you run NPM install, and it makes sure it downloads all the code needed for those two things. If you install it, if you give a dash G option, it tries to put it in the global repository there for your system. The global repository may or may not be readable by you, so you might have to do sudo when you do the global install. If you don't do that, it installs it in your local directory, in the Node modules directory. Does that? So all a Node module is a directory of code. It's a directory of code, typically with a, it may have something specifying its dependencies, because each of those modules may require other modules. They'll each have their own packages.json. That's why npm install churns for a while, because it's going recursively through the directory and finding out, I downloaded this module. Oh, that one demands this one. This one needs this one. That's why it keeps downloading all those packages. And you'll see they're all unpacked in this nice tree in your Node modules directory. It's all JavaScript code. You can look through it and see exactly how everything works. It's all there for you to inspect. But all a module is this. If you look in the Node book, Learning Node, it has a whole chapter at least on Node modules. Sit there and read it. It'll tell you this in more detail. But to understand Node modules, you also have to think about JavaScript, and you have to understand this whole. You have to understand the power of JavaScript. So why this sort of mechanism can be just implemented in JavaScript. The entire module system is really just in JavaScript. And it's a little more, if you look at the actual code, it's not quite so simple, but conceptually it's not that bad. And it all has to do with, before I go there, let me just make sure that at this high level, the use case of this is, I have some bit of code. It's in a directory. I want to use it. So in the top level index.js file of that module, it defines an exports function, an exports object. Whatever I define as an export object will be assigned to the value of the will be returned as the value of the requires call for it. And thus I can give it other names. Remember the whole namespace pollution issue in JavaScript? Where if you aren't careful, you have globals everywhere. This is Node's solution to it. Whenever I incorporate this code is all private. It's all in its own scope. Just like local variables in a function. In fact, functionally, they are local variables inside of a function. They're in their own closure. And the only way to get into that closure is by the value that's returned. And the value that's returned is the exports object.
Okay, so when going back to objects and inheritance, so if you make an object equal to a variable and then you make another variable and set that equal to that variable.
Okay, I'm gonna have to write that out. But okay, go ahead.
Is it like a pointer behind the variable? So do variables point to
objects? Is it called by value or called by reference? Is that what you're talking about? It's all called by reference. But most things, so a lot of things in JavaScript are immutable. Strings are immutable. Numbers are immutable. Objects are not immutable. They're mutable. So that's all called by reference. So if you pass around an object and it gets changed in one place, everyone will see it. If you want to have it copied, you have to explicitly copy it. Does that help?
Yeah.
Yes?
Directory.
Yeah, because the current directory is dot.
Oh,
the parent directory is dot dot. That's a Unix convention.
Well, what if you had,
it's also true in Windows, though.
What if you had some export function in your desk folder, I think, and it was an index machine, and then like in another folder, would you have the same dot slash?
Like if you made it, yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you wanted to say, Rob's going to say other code. You could have another module in a directory called other code. And you could incorporate the stuff in there by just doing require other dot slash other code. And it would load in the index.js there and expect there to be exports and assigned to the value. Think of this like in C you have include files to bring variables into your scope, otherwise they're external, they're references that you can't talk about. Each file. You can't see the variables in other files unless you can't see variables in other files, period, in C. The way you see variables and functions in other files is by adding a header file so that the header has the information you needed on that function, that function's definition, and that is logically included in the file. There's a C preprocessor that actually includes it in the file before the C compiler actually sees it. This is kind of like that, except it's all happening in the interpreter.
Yeah, this might not work. Like if you look down there, they have the double underscore directory name down there.
Uh-huh.
Abstract. That's how you're supposed to do the one above. You're not supposed to use the dot. Because if someone takes this code and uses it in some different context, it might use the local directory as another directory, and it will not find.
Right. The reason why you use dot in this context is because it's your code here. This is not portable that should be going elsewhere. If you do this dir name is logically like that, except it'll work anywhere. Like when you go into the subdirectories of the node modules, they'll be looking in their directories for the code. And that would be bad. So you want to have it be an absolute path. So you're generating an absolute path on the fly here. So this plus is string concatenation. Dir name is the absolute path of the current directory.
One more thing about the exports. The export object will have all the functions or the add and the index of the other file. Would that those cram or yes?
The reason why so the other way you could do this. See, another way to write this code, would be just to define index as equal to function, add as equal to this. And you'd say var index equals this, var add equals this. And then at the bottom, you would say exports.index equals index, exports.add equals add. And this is actually how other modules will do it, because what they'll do is they'll have 20 functions here, and maybe some objects or whatever,
And then at the bottom, they'll have the things that are explicitly exported. Because in general, you only want to export the things that you want publicly accessible. This is how you do public versus private in terms of modules.
Mm-hmm. Since the whole requires function is based on using directories, does that mean that only one file in the directory can have exports in it?
Well, it's going to load the index.js.
But so other than that,
those files could incorporate the other files. Can you know? Do you make references to them? You know, like the other, you know, other things. So you don't have to stick all your code in one file.
Index.js could bring stuff in from other files, and that stuff can be brought in by requires.
Right.
So what happens if you have two files in the routes folder, and both of the files have like an add function in there?
So you have in the routes folder you have two. Two JavaScript files. The only one that's going to get loaded in the routes file is the index.js.
Does it search all the export functions in the
directory? No. It just loads the index.js. It's using a web convention that's the name of the file. And the idea being that you might have other supporting files that are referenced. But you'll note that when you do this, the way you include code, like, for example, you'll do this requires, and then other code will do other requires. I mean, notice, that requires is how you incorporate modules. It's also how you divide your code up into smaller pieces. Because we didn't want to put all of our code in one file, and instead we have this other file, index.js. We could have just defined these two things in the main app.js file. We didn't have to define it here. We could have even defined it in line. But, so you can define whatever directories you want. If you look at the directory, you just put an index.js and then you've got it. You might say that seems a little silly having all these directories. You know, you have this directory for the module and stuff like that, but in practice you find that when you have those other directories, you'll have other support files with it. Look around at what I'd suggest if you're interested in how you structure a larger program, look at how the other modules are structured in Node. If you start looking at them, you'll see some ones that are very complicated, and you can see how they do dependencies. Okay. So let's take a break now, and then after the break, I think what we'll do is we'll go through some function examples. We'll kind of do some. We'll go through some nesting functions and talk about scoping and stuff. Okay. Wasn't recording. Sorry. Keep going. Sorry. What? Have you ever accessed D without it being defined in G? Sorry, repeat that, sorry. It's all, so. Oh, can I access, where can I access D? Is that what you're asking?
How would you syntax it so that you can print 18?
You want to print 18 from here?
From somewhere.
So, the key problem is D is private. So what I can do is I can do, okay, and or even better, this is where things get interesting. So we'll keep this. I'm going to just try simplifying the code here a little bit. So you've got G. So let's say now we want, we'll just start with, we're just going to go back to one instance. Now let's see what H of 9 is. What do you think this is going to return?
35. So you're saying, 21 plus 5 plus 9. So 21 plus 26. Yeah, 35. So, and we get 35. Good. Now, what's this going to return? Still 35. But now, what if I change this to be C plus D? So this is 37, because it's there. So why is that 37?
How did I get the value 37 here?
Just then.
So it's 5 plus 9 plus 21 plus 2.
Uh huh. How are we getting? But D was equal to C.
D got the C value from above where it was defined because they can't see what's below it.
Well, actually, that is true because when you define the function, the value of C was 21. And so when you said D equals C, D gets the value of C at that time. But now, when you later call it, it's going to the C inside of there is going to use the global value of C because it's not defined locally. And so that will change.
Yes?
You can't access D outside of F. But what if you were saying something like H equals F of D? Would F be able to access it because it's in its scope, or would we...
So repeat that. You said...
You can access D outside of F.
Right.
But if you were doing something like H equals F of D, we're kind of using F, but it's still outside that scope.
It's still outside the scope. You can't see it. You cannot refer to any names inside of it. They can only be referenced inside of that scope. D does not exist outside of there. If you have another D, it's a completely different D than the one inside. Yes?
So if in the initial enclosure, the variable D is there, but it's not like returned by any function, it's not returned by anything, that one's, it's like trapped, right?
The D is trapped?
Like, in what you had originally written,
yeah.
But it didn't return D
anyway, then I could, I couldn't access it, yeah. It would just be there, locally stored and never accessible. Now, let's make things really strange. Okay. Okay. Do you all see what I did? What did I do here?
I created an object
with one property. So instead of C being the value, instead of C just having the value 21, now C is an object, and the object has one property that we're defining, which is V. And V has a value 21. Correct? Yes.
Would you have to change the C?
Oh yes, I do have to change. Wait. The D equals C?
Also, the C equals 2.
Yeah, I do have to change this. Yes, I have changed that assignment. Okay, I get to say C dot V equals 2. Right?
If you just say C equals 2, what
does that mean? If I say C equals 2?
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a second. That's. Let's first do this. The value is 18. I did not change anything else. The value before was 37. Now it is 18. What just happened?
Well,
change the scope of C.
No, I did not. Well, it seems like I changed the scope, but what did I do? Yes?
When you say D is equal to C, you're saying D is going to point to what C is pointing to?
Exactly. D and C are both referring to the same object. So now, this object is referred to there. So when I say return C.v and D.v, I'm referring to two times the same object. So when I say two, so now it's 2 plus 2 plus 9 plus 5. 9 and 5 is 14, plus 4 is 18. Yes?
Is there any way in the console, in one line, to give back what G is, G of 5?
Oh, can I just get the value of G? No.
No, I mean in console.
No, I can't. I can't. I can't. I can't go in there. It's hidden. The only way, and the reason why it's hidden is actually very practical. Because what does it mean? You don't actually, if you refer to G, it does not have a well-defined value unless A has a value. And C and D, well, C is defined globally, but D has to have a value, and A has to have a value. And what are those values? They aren't defined. If I refer to the G on its own without at first defining those values, I don't know. So that's why you can't access that the function, because it has no meaning outside of that context. You can't rip things out of their lexical context and expect them to mean something, because they're dependent upon all the variables they can see. That's why the scope is packaged up. When things are private in JavaScript, they really are private. But you can expose them, especially if things like objects. You can make them public inadvertently. So let's say I reverse this. Let's say C was actually, so let's say the object was inside there and I returned the object, then I could start mutating it. What I can do here is I can add a new, I can make this return an object. So let's make this, instead of returning a function, what we'll do is we'll make an object. Var s equals empty object. So now we have an object here. And then what we'll do is we'll define this as s.g. So, and then let's say s dot, s dot d. Let's make so I'm putting a little object in here as the value of D. And then I'm going to say, so I have to change some other stuff here. Get rid of this for now. So now we have a function here. It has a local object called s. And then it has a local variable called d. And then I've got... Sorry, I don't want that var. Sorry. And then I define two methods on the object, g and retd. G
is our same old function. Yeah. Actually, we'll just queue and keep it like this. C.v and D.v.
You should get rid of the C.v.
Yeah.
Wait. C.v and then S is ret D function. You know, it just returns the object D. And then this returns S. So now, let's say H equals F of 5. Okay, let's do the same thing. What will this code do now? Okay, now this is a question. What will this code do now? Error? Okay, error. We got to vote for error. Return object. Anything else? Why do you think it will generate an error? There's no C. Why do you think it will return an object? Okay. It returned an object. Right? And the thing has two methods. You notice the object that we return has two methods, G and ret D. Now, why haven't we gotten an error? Because it's referring to C, and C is not defined anywhere on this file.
Is it because you're saying that G is that function, but you're not actually running that function?
That's exactly it. I have not run the function yet. It has not been executed. Thus, the interpreter has not looked inside and does not know whether it has a value or not.
What is ret D?
It's a function right there. S dot ret D. Function. What does it do? No. It's just I just made it up. It's not a keyword. It's just. But it does mean something. It returns D. So now, if I do. So this is a function with two methods. So I have an object now, H. So if I call H dot ret D, what will this return?
Error.
What did we just do now? It returned this ret D thing. Now what if I assign this to, well, that's nice to have this graphic history. If I do H of, I make this equal to so now I've defined X as that value. Now I'm going to say, let's file call H, let's just go ahead and call, we can just go ahead and do the REPL here. So we do H dot, H is an object, so I can call G, H dot G, and I call it of 3, what will I get? I had defined, so this is a thing you should know whenever you're doing redeval print loops. We'd already defined C. We're not evaluating it, we're actually just interpreting it as we go. But if we hadn't run that code before, C would not have a value. So really what you were expecting was C equals on the undefined. So now
That's what you were expecting. C is undefined. There's a form. And so what this means is whenever I define, see, if whenever you define something like this, okay, we're almost done here. It takes it from the global environment because I haven't specified it locally. And whatever that global environment is, you don't know. That's why you got to be very careful about variables you haven't given a var to. It's going to grab it from wherever, whenever the function is evaluated. Now, the last thing I wanted to put in here was, now let's make C equal to V dot 3. So now I can do, I get 32. Now, if I do x dot v, so x dot v is what? It's 21. If I do x dot v equal to 10, so that's 10. Question. What's that? It was 32, and now it's 21. I changed it. There was a local variable there that's private. D is 21, and I changed it. I changed that private variable. How did I change it? It's because I returned a reference to that object. That's what ret D is, it returned D. I returned the object, and I could change it, and it would change the behavior of the function. I took what was a private object and made it externally accessible. We can talk about this more. Play with your redeval print loop. Assignment 2 should come out shortly. Please finish up assignment 1. See you Friday.